Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review, who is also the author of The Weed Agency. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for you today, as usual. We start with good in the sense of the way it's being discussed, and that's the ongoing drama playing out, and troubling drama, quite frankly, in Ferguson, Missouri, which all started with the shooting death of what appears to be an unarmed black teenager over the weekend. Massive protests turned into looting and rioting, and the conduct of the Ferguson police has also come into question with the type of military machinery and weapons that they're using, their tactics towards members of the media, in addition to trying to keep the protesters under control. So major debate playing out pretty much in all circles, Jim, but certainly on the right. Normally, we'd gravitate towards the law and order perspective, but there's a lot of thoughtful criticism going on both sides of this debate as it plays out, and people in that part of the country obviously worry about how much this could get out of control.
Events on the ground in Ferguson, Missouri are absolutely terrible and troubling and disturbing, and you know, it's very understandable everyone would feel unsafe there. Having said that, I kind of am impressed at the caliber of debate that I guess I should say I'm seeing on conservative blogs. Twitter remains its usual food fight. But you're seeing folks like Mary Catherine Hamm, all folks who I greatly respect a great deal. Mary Catherine Hamm, Noah Rockman over at Hot Air, Leon Wolf over at Red State, R. Charlie Cook and Kevin Williamson, all kind of pointing out that, look, we on the right traditionally have always believed in law and order, and I don't think you're seeing any broad-based demonization of police and recognizing that they have a really tough job. Having said that, we also believe in the Constitution, and we don't believe that your constitutional rights are malleable based on the mood of the cops around you. There's definitely, pretty indisputably, some very troubling behavior that's being caught on camera of these cops in this town of Ferguson. I think probably the most vivid example, I don't know if you've seen the chance to see the video yet so far, an Al Jazeera news team basically getting tear gassed. They're doing a live stand-up, and the tear gas gets shot at them, and then heavily armed SWAT cops come along and start destroying their equipment until they realize that another news crew is filming them. Now, I am sure the cops in Ferguson, Missouri, have a very difficult job. They put their necks on the line trying to protect people, and I don't want to be seen as a knee-jerk critic of the cops. Having said that, I think Leon Wolf put it very well, and he says, look, part of the consequences of giving someone a badge and a gun and giving them the authority of the state is that we're entitled to expect they're going to respect the freedoms and constitutional rights of the citizenry, even when it is difficult or dangerous to do so. That's kind of right there in the job description. And you don't get to start tear gassing people and threatening people willy-nilly when the situation gets tense. In fact, the job is to keep a cool head when it does get very tense. Washington Post's Wesley Lowry was arrested apparently last night. The police were clearing a McDonald's area. This has been caught on video. The Washington Post has objected to it, and there are a couple of things that are troubling about it. The officer refused to give his name. No charges were filed. The only alleged offense that you can describe there is failure to respond to a lawful order. Greg, you may remember some of this discussion coming back during that Harvard professor who was arrested by the cops up in Cambridge. The president famously declared that the police had acted stupidly, and we ended up having the officer, the professor, and Vice President Biden and the president having a beer summit on the White House grounds. I remember having a really passionate discussion with my friend Cam Edwards, and you know, he's very much a conservative, I'm very much a conservative, but we very much came to a very different conclusions about at what point does an officer of the law allow to arrest you, what qualifies as a crime. And I had very much taken the perspective that, look, you know, saying something a cop doesn't like isn't a crime. You know, the First Amendment covers things that, you know, things that a cop might find offensive. And he's like, well, look, you're saying that it's legal to go up to a cop and start cursing at him? And I'm like, well, yes, I don't think a cop has a right to arrest you just because you're yelling, just because you're doing something he doesn't like. Now, at some point, does that reach the point of disturbing the peace? Yes, absolutely. You know, there's always the claim, you know, the alleged crime in circumstances like this is failing to follow a lawful order. Well, what do you define a lawful order here? And you know, just because a cop tells you to do something, Does common sense say it's a good idea to follow them? Yeah. You know, if a cop tells me to get out of the way, do I get out of the way? Yeah. But the bar to arresting someone, I think, you know, and somebody imprisoning you, detaining you, sending you down to the police station, even if you're later released, as Wesley Lowery was in Ferguson, Missouri last night, I want a fairly high bar before somebody slaps the handcuffs on you and takes you downtown. And there are other good conservatives who are going to see things a little bit differently. I do like how the fact that we on the right, that there isn't this knee-jerk reaction in either direction, I suspect. I don't think anyone's automatically saying, no, the cops are the good guys, and all those protesters and all those people who are angry in Ferguson have what's coming to them, and a whole bunch of people, no, I don't think there's necessarily a knee-jerk demonization of the cops. I'm glad this is all being caught on video, and we can see, evaluate for ourselves whether these cops are behaving appropriately. So undoubtedly it's a terrible situation, but I'm kind of impressed at how you can kind of see this kind of libertarian impulse of, wait a minute. Many cops are really good guys, but they are also instruments of the state. They're human, and they're going to make mistakes. And when they make mistakes, they have to be held accountable. So I think that's kind of a long, rambling response to the events of the morning. And I'm hoping, you know, folks on the right will continue to do in you know, what's a very tense situation there.
Major debates playing out over the internet don't always go that intelligently, as we've also learned recently. Anyway, on to the bad martini. As if the crisis in Missouri wasn't bad. We have, of course, the threat and the ongoing specter of horrors perpetrated by ISIS in Syria and Iraq. And yesterday on The Lead with Jake Tapper on CNN, his guest was Ali Kaderi, who has been an advisor to five different U.S. ambassadors to Iraq, and he put the threat posed by ISIS not only in stark terms by saying these folks are basically animals, which I think anyone following the story would agree with, Jim, but here's what he had to say about what happens if they go unchecked.
I consumed a lot of CIA and NSA products over the years. I obviously don't anymore, being outside of government. But you don't need access to CIA and NSA products to know that they are coming and that another 9/11 is imminent unless we act decisively and quickly and do it right now with our allies, both in the region and around the world.
So there you go, Jim. I think a lot of people have already said that if they can set up this state and people don't challenge it, that they're going to have a launching pad even more inviting to them than Afghanistan was prior to 9/11. And it sounds like those in the know are coming to that conclusion as well.
Yeah, we've had a lot of terror warnings over the years, but this doesn't seem like a guy who's inclined to sound like Chicken Little. There's a certain logic to it. Al-Qaeda was able to launch the 9/11 attacks because they were able to plan and operate relatively unmolested in Afghanistan for all those years. Right now, ISIS has a big chunk of territory, and other than some, you know, occasional bombing runs we're making, and maybe the Peshmerga of the Kurds, and ironically Bashar Assad, and maybe whoever's left of the Iraqi military forces, you know, but by and large, they control a lot of territory. They're able to do stuff. And they've openly said, you know, they want to see the black flag of ISIS flying over the White House and things like that. So the idea that they would be planning attacks against Americans here at home and abroad doesn't seem all that hard to imagine. And if they're not being interdicted, if nobody's doing anything to stop them, it's probably just a matter of time before they succeed. So extremely ominous. God forbid, but you know, maybe a month from now, we look at this and say, God, you know, this guy called it correctly. Or hopefully our luck holds out and something happens to impede ISIS's ambitions. But it certainly doesn't seem all that unthinkable that at some point ISIS could get seriously into the business of killing Americans.
All right, on to the crazy now. And it's been a little while since we've talked about the story of Bo Bergdahl, who earlier this summer was released by the Taliban in exchange for five Gitmo detainees, some of whom were pretty high-value Gitmo detainees. Former platoon mates of Bo Bergdahl have a very different story than the White House has been telling about the captivity and how he became a captive and all that sort of thing. And as a result, they tried to sell their story, get a book deal with Simon & Schuster. And the response they got made quite a bit of the rounds yesterday in conservative media. The response they got from Sarah Durand, a senior editor at Atria Books, a division of Simon & Schuster, was, "I'm not sure we can publish this book without the right using it to their ends. The conservatives are all over Bergdahl and using it against Obama. And my concern is that this book will have to become a kind of swift boat veterans for truth." So, Jim, it turns out that just the fact that a book could hurt the president's reputation is enough to spike something that would potentially make them a lot of money.
You know, if I remember correctly, Greg, I'm pretty sure, you know, Unfit for Command was a bestseller.
Yes, it was.
So, heaven forbid, book editor, if you publish a bestseller, oh no, we'll make all that money, someone stop us. Now, here's the thing. This publisher, if she is a committed Democrat, and she believes this book would be used against the president, and that's not an unreasonable conclusion, then she's not under any obligation to publish it or to say, I want to do this. I think probably a nice thing to do or a decent thing to do would be to say, look, this is not a project I'm interested in being affiliated with, but maybe my colleague so-and-so might. And that assumes it's something that there's a publisher at Simon & Schuster who'd be interested in publishing this. My editor over there left a long time ago. So maybe there are no conservatives left at Simon & Schuster, and they will leave good ideas on the table. I wonder if they've reached out to Random House. I wonder if they've reached out to Regenerate. Thankfully, there are other ones. It's just kind of crazy that you see it that transparently and kind of just, you know, like that's her measuring stick. And like, you know, like, so let's suppose that what these troops are saying that, you know, he is accurate. You know, the idea that all nine of them are making up a story seems kind of hard for me to believe. You know, that then, yes, he's a deserter. And yes, we gave away five really dangerous guys to get a deserter back. Doesn't the public have a right to know that? Isn't that something that should trouble even a liberal or a fan of the president? Isn't, you know, can't they open themselves to the possibility that maybe the president made the right choice here? And what this editor is kind of thinking here is like, well, if it hurts the president, I must hide it. The public must not know. I must do my part to ensure nobody sees this, lest they actually learn the truth and figure out the president made a bad call. You know, at that point, you're really kind of veering from somebody who's interested in politics and you know, passionate about telling stories and things like that, to a bit of a propagandist. Once your job involves covering up information inconvenient to your cause, rather than spotlighting information that advances your cause, I think you've crossed a line. I think that's, you know, this editor is going to get some criticism for it, and she's probably got it coming.
Yeah. On the hot air version of this story, Alec Pundit writes the story, and one of his lines is, imagine how upset Durand will be when she finds out Obama can't be swift-voted because, sob, he can't run again.
Accurate.
Yes. Jim, very good. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to join us again on Friday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.